This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Of You Don't Know Billy Jack, a podcast series where we discuss some of the greatest matches of all time through the eyes of a non-wrestling fan. And my non-wrestling fan today, of course, as always, is Jordan Darby.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm just getting over a little bit of a cough, but I'm all right.
Very good. Are you going to ask me how I'm doing?
How are you doing?
I'm just thinking about the end.
No. No. By the way, the Princess Diana beanie baby bear is the most sought after.
Is it?
Princess the Bear.
Princess the Bear.
These people have no, like, scope of collectability or how to, like, deal with, like, what is collectible. Because you could go on eBay right now and buy one for, like, a dollar.
Yeah.
But then you can look and see, and like, someone on Etsy or somewhere is selling one for $97,000.
Yeah.
And there's no difference.
Wonderful.
So.
I was doing a little Beanie Baby research myself.
Yeah.
And Patty the Platypus.
Yeah, that comes in maroon or whatever.
Well, we have the pink one.
Okay.
Is the maroon one the rare
That's
one?
That's the rare one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, because yeah. I was going to say, oh, we have a rare one, but yeah. It's still not worth anything.
Yeah, it's gotta be this, like, maroon color.
Okay. And so for the folks at home, Jordan, our discussion about Beanie Babies, we were talking yesterday about which one in 2018 would you be able to sell for the most money, and we were going back and forth, and you had quite a revelation for me about a certain bear called The End.
Yeah, it was a special McDonald's promotional, and I mean, they're making it look like it's the last one they ever made, because that's its name, is The End the Bear.
And it's all black.
And it says... It's packaged in like an action figure style packaging, and the background spread is, it's like a book, like the final chapter of a book. There's like a sunset in the background, and it says something like, "So long, my friends. You know, this is the end for us." It's like, it's really cryptic and dark. And then its birthday is none. It's like date of birth none. It's really weird. The end. Yeah.
So I'm not a Beanie Babies collector, nor have I ever been, but
what? really
Jordan. But I desperately want this bear, so that's been my new focus for the past 12 hours.
Yeah, I imagine it will remain an intense focus.
Although I could just buy one for 75 cents.
Yeah, that's true. But that might ruin a little bit of the mystery of the end.
That's true. Well, okay. Quickly, before we get started on this week's match, or this episode's match, rather, we have a little music business to discuss. You gave me a Doors CD.
Oh, yeah.
I let you borrow a St. Vitus CD. What did you think of the St. Vitus CD?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, primitive doesn't even, like, begin to describe it.
Yeah.
It's like knuckle-dragging.
Yeah.
Which I liked. I really enjoyed the lyrical content.
Yeah.
The guy's, like, all depressed, and it's, like, about alcoholism and stuff.
Yeah.
So that was like, because that's, you know, I don't like a lot of that, the typical occult stuff or whatever. It's not interesting to me. So, that was pretty cool. His voice was okay. I mean, it was less annoying than like Ozzy's.
Yeah.
It's more like burly, I think.
Yeah.
And
Wino, we're talking about.
Wino, yeah. And so I just didn't really, I don't normally like care, but I didn't really like the production.
Yeah.
You know, it made the, I don't need it to sound like, you know, all heavy or whatever, but I feel like if the, if it would have been produced differently, it could have like been a lot heavier sounding.
Yeah.
That's
Total Access though.
That's Total Access. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the story of that studio.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, but it was kind of funny how, like, I feel like I have, I feel like I can relate to that guitarist a lot.
Yeah.
Like his tone and style of play.
Yeah. I think Chris Corey said it best, that, because I think that's a big, like, inspiration for him, is, like, a guy with big concepts, but a limited scope of ability.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, he's, I mean, you could tell that they're pretty dialed in with what they want to do.
Yeah.
You know.
It's like they play to their strengths perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything's very simple,
mm-hmm.
but it's, like, well done and clean and effective, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah, like, when when they play that Thirsty and Miserable cover and they like, double time it, they are holding on, like, for dear
barely.
Life. Like,
yeah.
He can, like, barely form those chords.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because it, like, it's not that fast. Yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I'm a little interested. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. Like I said, that's what a lot of people think their high watermark is. Not me personally, but, yeah. And production is something that kind of plagued them their entire career. I think the last record they did in 95, or the last one before, like, the reunion stuff, the one in 95, that's the one that they think is the best, and that was produced the best. And it is. Like, that one sounds the best, but...
Yeah, it's... I mean, I can't picture playing, like, slow heavy metal in the early, mid-80s.
Yeah.
You know, in L.A. or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you gonna find, like, someone to produce that?
Yeah. Well, it was only SST that liked them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
no one else, because they'll talk about, you know, in, like, any interview, like, the metal guys didn't like them.
And right.
The punk guys didn't like them. Like, they were all punks, but...
Yeah. Yeah, know. So, I mean, you bangers can't really be choosers.
Yeah.
And so they probably just had Spot or whoever.
Yeah, that's exactly right? What it was, yeah.
And just, like, pressing buttons and...
Yeah. Just record it, dude.
And they were probably all really high
and
thought it sounded cool, so...
Yeah.
Can't fault them for that. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it's a pretty interesting concept they got going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, them and Trouble and Pentagram in the 80s, you know, or stateside.
Like Doom... type bands.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, pretty interesting.
Yeah. Anyways, I've been listening to that Doors.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a lot better than the other one. I like the other one, Morrison Hotel. I like that one for the vocals mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, like, the music's real interesting and...
Yeah.
There's, like UK prog elements to it almost.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Probably the lineage is like folk.
Yeah.
Like a little folk music or something.
Yeah, I would think so.
Like that's the commonality there, but like I don't know if those guys were listening to early, well, I mean that was 67.
Yeah,
that so came out. So
it, yeah, so it was like recorded. I think it was recorded in 66.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, Prague didn't even really exist.
Yeah, I mean, they're very much on the forefront of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, a lot of the times, for me at least, growing up, the character of Jim Morrison overshadowed, like, the importance of them as a band.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I mean, I like Jim Morrison and all that, but, I mean, he's a Kurt Cobain, like,
yeah,
t-shirt guy. Like,
yeah.
and it's like becomes a caricature of itself really quick. But like musically, I mean, they were, I mean, it, like I think we talked about before, if you want to talk about like proto punk or whatever, really a lot of it starts with that band.
Yeah.
You know, because they, the first record, which you haven't dove into yet.
Right.
I mean, came out at such a time where like there was absolutely nothing like it as far as just how dark it was and
yeah,
and heavy in that way. And then the live performances, you know, were very much confrontational. And, you know, we were listening at the store. You know, we've got like Pandora or whatever, and we've got it on all these different playlists, you know, 60s, whatever. And a live version of the song The End came on, and it's really long. And
is it about the Beanie Baby?
It's about the Beanie Baby, which is like so prophetic, you know. Yeah. Anyway, he just like, it's kind of ending, and he's just going kill, 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 like over and over again. And it's like, you know, that was probably like 66, 65 or 66.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
If you look at like what was going on in pop music or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think they're worthy of exploration if you like that kind of, that kind of trace of like hard music or whatever.
Yeah, it's very sleazy.
Yeah,
like it really feels like heavy drug music.
Definitely. Yeah, I like can't really listen to that stuff all the time.
Yeah,
because it's really like hedonistic and like indulgent in a dark way.
Yeah, dude, you know what it's like vibe wise is I Hate God.
Huh. I wouldn't doubt it, because yeah, they're like obviously mining the same misanthropic like lifestyle.
Yeah,
of just like it's all about me and self destruction and
yeah, and just like music that you gotta be in a certain
yeah,
either very dark or very happy and fulfilled place to be able to listen to.
Right,
because otherwise, like it's gonna be a mess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, interesting. So anyways, do you think you will be mining any more St. Vitus territory?
I'd try another record, yeah.
You might. I'd be interested to think. I'll let you borrow the one after it that has Living Backwards on it.
Oh, is that the song we did?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
Yes, it's a little like, how would I describe it? It is produced better,
mm-hmm.
But it's a little... No, it's not quite as slow, maybe. Like, Living Backwards is slow, but it's a little more driving, I guess.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah,
a little more driving, maybe.
Okay.
Like if it's a little more, like, biker music.
Okay.
It's, so like, maybe a little more in the vein of The Obsessed.
Okay.
Because that's, like, real, like, dirtbag, depressed biker music, you know?
Uh-huh.
So it's a little more in that vein, maybe, but... Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I'm definitely curious. I think that they've got an aesthetic that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And I like that it felt really unpretentious.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so that's important to me with that whole, whole general thing. Genre of music.
Yeah.
You can't really have pretense or I won't follow.
Yeah.
You know, but it's feels like they love what they're doing, and it's, you're kind of welcome in. It doesn't feel like closed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I guess actually it's two records after. Because Mournful Cries is right after that.
Okay.
That has Dragon Time on it.
I'm not familiar with that, but...
And we're about to have a little Dragon Time of ourselves. Right,
okay, right, well, what do you got for us today?
Because today the match that we're watching from WrestleMania 3, very famous match, the Macho Man Randy Savage,
okay,
versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Okay, I've never heard of that person.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Yeah. You have heard of the Macho Man?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the Macho Man, yeah.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, you're not familiar
no.
with? No. Well, you will be familiar with him soon.
Okay.
We'll get into it here.
Yeah.
I should say that, as always, we will be doing a live watch of the match, discussing anything that comes up along the way, and afterwards, I will ask you a series of questions, And you know where those questions are derived from, of course.
I don't... You can go ahead and say it.
Bernard Pivot.
Oh my gosh. Don't make me laugh.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it to it here.
Okay.
So now this is the background on their feud right here. So what we're seeing there is the Macho Man slamming the ring bell on Ricky Steamboat's neck.
Two neck problems. He's being carried out on a stretcher.
Mm-hmm.
Dude. He's talking to this sketchy looking doctor that was certainly not medically certified.
No, you don't think so?
In a professional way.
And so we're seeing this is the background of their feud here. So we got that's Ricky the Dragon Steamboat right there. And so here's George the Animal Steel.
Whoa.
And he's carrying away Miss Elizabeth, who is Randy Savage's valet.
Okay.
And so he has a crush on Miss Elizabeth. They were Savage and George the Animal Steel were feuding the prior year in 1986.
Okay.
And so he would come out, and they wouldn't touch, but they'd do a lot of pose downs and that kind of thing. History beckons the Macho Man.
Yeah, it looked like a weird, like, terrorist video or something.
So what do you think of this venue here?
Yeah, pretty impressive. This looks approaching a little more familiarity.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the glitz and glam and the cameras and lights. Yeah.
And so this is the WWF.
Okay.
This is WrestleMania 3. In the Pontiac Silverdome. Claimed attendance of 93,000 people.
Okay.
there's a lot of controversy about that number, Jordan.
I mean, it looks like a lot of people there.
It is a lot of people. No matter how many people it is, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is like the peak of Hulkamania.
Okay.
Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan, that's the main event.
Okay.
So
and
this
yet
is like,
this is on the list of the supposed greatest matches of all time.
Yeah, yeah. that's more the Hulk Hogan match is different in the sense of it's like a big Clash of the Titans,
sure.
Big moment type of thing. But a lot of people think that's that's not like a great match.
Okay, like from a pure wrestling
right.
Stand.
Yeah, I do. I love it. I think it's like incredible.
Yeah.
But, you know, not a lot.
All right, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, somewhat special. George the Animal Steel in your corner. However, in my opinion, this could be your last shot at Randy Savage and the Intercontinental title.
My last opportunity. Randy Savage, the day has finally come. The minutes, the seconds, we have reached our moment. As you and I climb into the ring, we clash like two titans. But there will only be one winner. One last match.
I gotta be careful with like what I say because I mean no disrespect to anybody.
Uh-huh.
But they just don't seem like they don't seem mentally, like, stable. You know what I mean? Like, right. It doesn't seem like they're just actors, like... Like, they're doing an act, but... I don't know. There just seems something really off balance about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, that's this WWF style of promo, where it's really character-based and over-the-top and cartoonish.
True.
Did we watch... I guess we didn't watch any real promos from, like, the Magnum versus Tully type thing.
No.
Where it feels a little more based in reality.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder what you would... You may have similar feelings on that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Well, what do you think of the ring, like the cart that they have to take people?
It's quite ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, real name Richard Blood.
Whoa. That's cool.
Yeah. I believe he's Native American.
Okay.
Not billed as such. He's billed as Hawaiian.
Right.
Yeah. Which is a very classic wrestling trope of... anyone not white, they're probably billed from somewhere that they're not.
Gosh.
So it's very, especially in this era.
Right.
It's, you know, anyone that's Japanese is probably Hawaiian.
Dude.
Anyone that's billed as a Native American is probably Italian. And so on.
Brutal.
Yeah.
That's from a twisted mind, I guess.
Well, you know who that twisted mind is?
The McMahon guy.
It's him.
So, what is this hairy man, like, why is he there?
So, that's George the Animal Steel. He's just in Ricky Steamboat's corner.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, you're able to kind of see the scope of this this event here.
Yeah.
Does it feel like a big deal to you?
It does, yeah. Maybe out of everything we've watched.
Yeah. And so it's a real fast-paced match here to start out. And this is for the Intercontinental title, but it's also very personal.
Right.
Based on, Randy Savage hurting his neck and all that.
Right.
So.
And the drama with the valet.
Right. Yeah. Which is kind of an ancillary story.
Mm.
That's kind of a way of finishing up the feud between George Steele and the Macho Man.
Got it.
They're kind of like merging the two stories together.
Got it.
Yeah. And so do you have, I mean, I guess you probably do. You have some kind of inclination as to who the babyface is and who the heel is.
Well, they're cheering louder for the Steamboat.
Yeah.
So I would assume he's the babyface.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, he is. This is one that it's much more clear.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not part of the nuance of the... of the match.
Sure.
But something to pay attention to is like this between that Magnum versus Tully match that we watched. Because it's actually, they're comparable in a lot of ways.
Hmm. So like, how long have these two guys been professional wrestlers at this point in their careers?
Oh, long time. Probably going on 15 years for both of them.
So they're definite veterans.
Yeah.
At this stage.
Yeah.
I mean, the Macho Man looks, like, pretty old.
Yeah. And he came up, like, with his dad in a lot of, like, outlaw promotions.
Okay.
And doing real sketchy stuff. Before this, he was in Memphis.
Uh-huh.
Memphis Wrestling, which Jerry Lawler and Andy Kaufman. Have you know
they? Oh yeah,
happened in Memphis.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so he was in Memphis. Ricky Steamboat. When he started, he went to a territory called Mid-Atlantic early in his career, and that was like 77. And then he stayed there most of the time until like 84.
Okay.
Or very early 85.
And what year is this?
This is 87.
87.
Yeah.
I've noticed that now we haven't had every match in English, and there have been varying degrees of everything, but these guys have been like calling out like every move they've done.
Yeah.
Which has been different than what we've seen.
Yeah.
It feels more like they're trying to be like ESPN.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Announcers, in a way.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people. I mean,
yeah.
This is quite live here.
It's one of those. So now they're really picking up the pace.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of transcendent crowds where like the noise. It moves into like a different spectrum almost, where it's maybe not as loud as if they were in like a basketball arena or something.
Yeah, just because, I mean, the threshold is such that
you
would notice if they were removed.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're now just like clotheslining each other back and forth.
Yeah. So pretty fast paced the entire time. Not a lot of downtime, would you say?
I would fully agree, yeah. That animal guy is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah?
He just looks like he's from another era.
Yeah, he is. He's a real old school guy.
Like, he seems more like a circus freak.
Yeah. And he's just kind of hanging around.
Yeah.
Still. And wouldn't for very long after this. But yeah, that's like... That's like someone... Well, like there's an episode of Seinfeld where they reference George the Animal Steel.
Oh, really?
Just like that. That's like a stereotypical wrestler that you think of from the 60s era. Or 70s.
Yeah,
or
yeah. Yeah, he's just kind of like... I don't know, something degenerate about him. He's kind of like submissive to that. I don't know. I don't know. But his face is like... he looks like Babe Ruth, kind
of. Yeah. Is it his body hair? Is that a big part of it?
That's a huge part of that aesthetic. I mean, like I said, he looks like a roadside attraction.
Yeah.
And he's wearing the lace-up boots all high and all that. But...
No, you go ahead.
Do they, like, in this era, do they use, like, do they ever use props or anything?
Maybe like a chair or something?
Yeah.
That's
part of the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so he, remember the Macho Man used a ring bell.
Yeah. That's true.
Mm-hmm. So is anything standing out to you different? Because the other, we've seen two other U.S. matches. The 60-minute draw and then the Magnum Tully one. Is anything standing out? Are there differences that you're seeing?
It seems to be kind of like one speed.
Okay.
And they're using, I mean, I don't know if it's true or not, but it feels like they're just going on those ropes a bunch.
Uh-huh.
Like, they're running around back and forth on those ropes a ton.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm not remembering correctly, but it doesn't feel like the other matches were doing that as much.
No, they didn't nearly as much. And so we're starting to see, well, we thought maybe that was a bit of a comeback, but
yeah,
but it was not. And so you're taking note of how many pinning attempts there are in this match.
So many.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah, so now it's feeling like, yeah, so they're doing the running back and forth, throwing each other into the ropes, and uh-huh. beating each other on the ropes.
Uh-huh.
A lot of time out of the ring.
Yeah. And do you know what it's called when they throw each other into the ropes?
Mm-mm.
An Irish whip.
An Irish whip. A lot of Irish whips going on here. Now it seems like if there's a story, it's like they're kind of in the thick of this battle, and they're both winded, and he's beaten up on the babyface a lot, and now the babyface has like started to try to come back.
Yeah,
so the crowd's like going crazy.
Yeah.
So if you're touching the rope while you're trying to be pinned, you're good, right?
Yeah. And that's a big, like, that's a great storytelling device, because you can always, they can be down and out, not able to kick out, but they can put their foot on the ropes, and it always gets a big reaction.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of interesting. Before the last time, I had never known that.
It's yeah. That's a big, yeah, that's like a really good, like, useful tool. Like I said, a real good storytelling device. And so it's real fast paced still. Does it feel like it's ramping up even more?
It feels like it is.
Yeah.
It feels like a constant turnover. They're also doing, like, it feels pretty choreographed.
Okay.
It doesn't feel like, I mean, I guess this would speak to their experience, but it doesn't feel, that neither of them feel lost at all. Like, they're in the moment.
Uh-huh. So that's very interesting that you say that. I have a point about that, or something to tell you. All right. I guess I'll just tell you. No.
It's kind of gymnastic. Like they're doing a lot of tumbling over each other, but it doesn't feel. Dude, he just swung at the ref.
Uh-huh.
That always gets me for some reason. It's just this little guy running around, but then they'll like club him or something.
Yeah. Yes.
There's a lot of acrobatic motion. It feels like, and it. But it doesn't feel, I don't know, it's pretty smooth.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny, like, when they're just straight hitting each other,
uh-huh.
It looks really fake.
Yeah.
Like, more than anything we've seen.
Yes.
Yeah. Some of the ones we've seen, I've been like, oh, that's pretty passable.
Yeah.
But, like just then, the Macho Man swung at the babyface, and, like, the babyface didn't even flinch at all.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, not... They weren't together.
Yeah. And so that's, of course, the WWF style, which is very, very soft compared to the, like, grittier, harder, like, Southern promotions or, I mean, then of course, Japan or...
Yeah.
You know, even in Mexico.
That's a notable difference.
Yeah.
In my view.
Yeah. And so Macho Man has hit his big elbow drop
onto the guy. He's trying to get his windpipe again or whatever.
Yeah, but there's no referee. They knocked the referee out.
Oh, okay. So he can't get the official count, even though the guy's out.
Right, yeah. And so he's realized that
Dude. Now he's shoving the announcer over and he's getting the ring bell.
Yeah.
But the animal guy is back.
Yeah, and so... Well,
dude, he's sketchy. That looks just really... I'm sorry. I know I'm hung up on that guy.
Oh, so there you go.
So he's trying to do his little part.
Yeah. As a man in the corner for the dragon. Yeah. So. Uh-oh. And that's it.
So he turned it over on him.
Yeah. So you got a small package on the Macho Man.
And what's that's a small it. Package?
So, you know, that move where he rolls him up. He rolls him like, over, kind of in a ball. Him. Yeah. That's what you call a small package.
Huh.
And Miss Elizabeth crying on the outside.
Hmm. Huh, that was pretty, I didn't expect that, tempo-wise.
Yeah.
Because they were just kind of going.
Yeah.
But then they, I mean, I guess it makes sense because he had defeated the Steamboat Man.
Yeah.
But the ref was out, and so he's going to go clock him with the bell.
Yeah.
I don't like that animal guy. He seems like a total just villain to me.
Really?
Yeah.
He was for a lot of his career.
And he's just...
So there you go. Huge moment. Big win. Crowd went crazy.
Yeah, big time.
So we will lower the volume now and do a little bit of talking here.
I'm not going to be able to take it if it's going to be like some clown pimp or something fighting a redheaded lady. Or
Boogie Woogie Man, maybe?
Yeah.
No, you wish. You wish the Boogie Woogie Man was the main event of WrestleMania 3. Okay, so I want to say something. Very interesting that you noted how choreographed it was.
Yeah.
So the Macho Man is notorious for planning out his matches.
Huh.
In extreme detail, step by step by step by step. So remember we talked on an earlier episode, like you asked about, okay, so how much is planned and whatever.
Right.
And I said, well, you know, I don't remember what match it was, but, you know, whatever match we were talking about, and older school matches, they know, like, the end of the match, the finish of the match.
Sure.
And everything else, they just go for it.
Right. It's really free form.
Yeah. Not the case with the Macho Man. And there was a interview recently.
No.
Look at that.
See, I'm telling you.
So we got Alice Cooper and Jake the Snake now. Do I need to turn this
You're
off?
You're going to have to turn it off. Okay. I can't look at that.
Okay. we'll turn that off.
Look at that.
Mean Gene interviewing Alice Cooper and Jake the Snake. So, anyways. So Ricky Steamboat is very famous for calling everything in the ring.
Hmm.
Just on the fly, so like, you know?
Improvising.
Yeah. Whereas Savage is the exact opposite. So crazy. Every single... And I heard an interview with Ricky Steamboat recently where he talked about how they sat down and planned out, and it was like hundreds of steps.
Crazy.
So every single thing. Okay, we lock up, I throw you over the rope, I throw you into the ropes.
Yeah, yeah.
I get up on the top and do this. Everything was planned out, and they would quiz each other.
Wow.
Leading up to the match.
Yeah, so that came through. I mean, if an average viewer like me could feel that.
Feel something, yeah.
Yeah.
So does that hurt your enjoyment of the match at all? Or hurt, like, do you feel like that makes it more or less, I don't know, legitimate or admirable?
I think it changes it. Like, that at this point, it's something different than what we've been looking at.
Yeah.
It's not the wrestling that we've been looking at.
Right.
Because, you know, from the beginning, you just get the sense that there's choreography. And all of these matches we've seen have been, you know, have had these guys with kind of an acrobatic sense and all that. But, I mean... with the stepping and the moving like they were doing, it doesn't feel urgent. Like it feels more like an act.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it all is, but I mean, it didn't feel like we've had, there's been pockets and moments in some of these other matches where I really was confused or like unsure of like what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Even in the sense of like, I don't think they know, or like they might do something on accident.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This would like didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, the fake hitting was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Or good. I don't know.
Bad.
I
mean, yeah.
It didn't look well done to me.
No. And that's WWF.
And that's, yeah, I guess so. That, I mean, it's unlike anything else. Have we seen any other WWF?
No.
Yeah, so it was unlike anything else we've seen when it came to the hitting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind that.
Right.
Actually, because I don't really care for actual violence. So, I mean, it's easier on the eyes when you can blatantly tell, like, they're not hurting you. They're not, like, hitting each other.
Yeah.
But, again, it felt weird for them to roll around like they were doing into those hits.
Uh-huh.
Because it was so, like, paced.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, though. But I don't know that makes it, like, less interesting.
Mm-hmm.
To me. I'm not sure.
What it the whole thing about WWF is that they're telling big stories.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
And so it's a different way of telling a story where they're telling a macro narrative. And so maybe a lot of the minutia doesn't necessarily matter.
Right.
And to use an example from the same show, this Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant match, the grand spectacle of it and the moment they call a WrestleMania moment, which is something iconic that happens on this big stage and all that. That's what matters to them, whereas the intricate details and the minutia of the actual match are much less important.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that comes through, and I felt it. I mean, I was able to get there and enjoy it on a surface level, but I didn't have any feeling like the Tully match,
yeah,
where there was a bit of a frenzy to it.
Yeah.
And like we had talked about the blurring of the lines of like good and evil and the kind of actions that they were taking didn't feel as consequential or important in this.
Yeah. Okay.
This one, to
okay.
me. I
mean, yeah.
Just from what they showed.
Yeah. So that kind of leads us into our questions. Then, number one, general thoughts. You shared those. Did you like the match? Why or why not? You kind of shared that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I would, if I had to like binary choose one, I would say I liked it.
Yeah. What was the story of the match that the wrestlers were trying to convey? You kind of went over that during the match.
Yeah, but and they kind of walked me through that more than some of these other ones, too.
Mm-hmm.
But you got the sense that, pardon me, the Macho Man was the villain or the heel or whatever you'd call him.
Mm-hmm.
And they just went at it and they just started going.
Yeah.
But they did do kind of an abbreviated sense of like, at one point the hero guy was down and everyone, you could feel the audience like feeling that.
Uh-huh.
And then, when he rose again and like when he was doing the jumping off of the pole, the audience was like crazy.
Yeah.
And then when he did the small package, I mean, the audience like went wild.
Yeah.
You know, but again, I didn't feel like a magnitude of like, I did the magnitude of the story like wasn't very clear to me.
Okay.
Like they walked me through it. They took me there, but like
yeah,
it was more just kind of like a high energy tumble.
Yeah.
To me.
So, number four question: can you see why this is considered to be one of the greatest matches of all time?
No, I don't know why, but I mean, it was an entertaining, fast paced match that, were two seasoned wrestlers that I mean, ignorant as I am, I could tell, like, these guys, had prepared in some way, either like the choreography that I was unaware of, but I could intune it,
mm-hmm.
and the experience that they brought in. So, without like really seeing other WWF matches from this time,
mm-hmm.
that would be hard for me to like say why this would be considered like important.
Yeah, so that's kind of one of the reasons why I wanted you to watch this without seeing any other WWF at this point. And after watching some of the matches we've already seen,
mm-hmm.
so this match's reputation is largely based on like a lot of people say it's the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. Some people do think it's the greatest match of all time, but those people are people that generally have only watched or are really really invested in WWF.
Mm-hmm.
The style that they worked at that point, up to that point on that biggest stage, was not really something that was done a lot at the time in the company. So all the pinfalls and the fast paced of it,
mm-hmm.
and it feeling like a little more of a straight wrestling match, mm-hmm. than a real cartoony thing, that's kind of where it gets its reputation from.
Okay.
And they had other matches before this that are, in my opinion, better. So leading up, like there's a couple matches from Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a real bloody brawl that they have that kind of conveys like the personal nature of the feud a little bit better, I think. But in terms of like, you know, this is the big stage, 93,000, however many people are there for the Intercontinental title. Huge match, biggest show they've ever done. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure, yeah.
So to have...
a lot of firsts, kind of.
Yeah, to have that big stage and everything, that big spectacle element, mm-hmm. and then have that type of match that hadn't really been done very much in that era, that's kind of where it gets its reputation from.
Mm-hmm.
Largely based on context, really. Yeah. But that's kind of the point of like what we're doing is like, I want to know what someone thinks with no context.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah,
because, I mean, if you were to show anybody that match, myself included, I mean, you couldn't... It's hard to argue that, like, it's not entertaining. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's got the energy, and it's just going, motors along, and, like I said, the experience of the wrestlers is evident. But
yeah.
It's hard for me to feel like there's a transcendent element.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what we're looking for here. So
yeah.
Yeah. So let's rank the matches now.
Yeah, you're gonna have to start helping me a little bit.
Right, yeah. So this is your order right now. Magnum Tully number one, Bockwinkel versus Hennig, the 60-minute draw number two, the New Japan Gauntlet match number three, and then Sangre Chicana versus MS1. First.
Okay.
Or last, rather, number four.
Got it. Gosh, this is really hard because excuse me. I feel like the flavor of this is so different than everything that we've seen,
mm-hmm.
that like is the criteria of the rank on pure entertainment? Base entertainment, primal entertainment, or is it like what I think like as a good wrestling match?
No, I guess that's something we actually need to establish right now.
Because like it's weird right now. That's either the second best or the worst,
depending on what your criteria.
Yeah,
is.
Because if it's more like as an entertainment. Spectacle, I'd put it as number two.
Okay.
If it's like based on the like what I've seen and I'm learning about wrestling and how I feel about again the lack of transcendence,
mm-hmm.
it's last.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So that's actually something that we at this point we need to figure out.
Let's put it as a wrestling match.
As a wrestling match? Okay.
Yeah.
So you want to, from here on out, you want to judge everything as a wrestling match, not necessarily how much you enjoyed it. Or pure entertainment value.
Yeah. Okay. So I think enjoyment needs to be like a large factor.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe over 50%, but like not like the only factor.
Yeah. Okay. I like that.
And
yeah.
So if that's the case, I'm going to put this last.
Okay. So, yeah. So right now your rankings are Magnum Tully, Bach versus Hennig, New Japan Gauntlet, Sangre Chicana versus MS1, Macho Man versus Steamboat.
Yeah.
Mine would be Magnum Tully, Sangre Chicana versus MS1, New Japan Gauntlet, Bach Hennig, Macho Steamboat. This is a match that it's a good match, but that's kind of it for me.
Okay,
so I don't really like it a whole lot.
Huh, yeah.
Or don't love it, I guess.
Yeah, like, yeah, in the conversation of the most legendary,
yeah,
greatest matches or whatever.
Yeah, I think it, in terms of like holding up or whatever, like I think it holds up fine, but I don't think, and I get like, because Steamboat even says that what they were trying to do with this match, the story they were trying to tell was that the title is the most important thing, and that's how he could really get back at Steamboat, or at Macho Man, was taking its title, mm-hmm, rather than a personal like blood feud.
Sure.
So I get that, but it especially compared to even within their own match history together, I don't know. I think they've had better matches. You know, they had a better one the month before, in my opinion.
Is this the only match that we've seen so far that there hasn't been any blood?
Yes. Yeah.
That was kind of interesting, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know.
I don't need blood, like,
right.
You know what I mean? But you wonder about the correlation.
Yeah. Yeah. And the finish with George the Animal Steel being involved, like that whole thing kind of felt shoehorned in,
mm-hmm,
which it was to try to finish that story as well.
Sure.
So yeah, I don't know. Like it's good and fine, but
serviceable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would it be like the perfect, I don't know what the terminology is for the match before the penultimate match before, like, you know, the main event.
So what they usually do, gosh, I'm trying to think. I think there was a match. You know what? I haven't watched WrestleMania 3 all the way through. I don't know if I've ever actually sat down and watched the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
there might have been something else.
I think there's a match, because what they would do a lot of times is do a cool down match.
Huh.
So something real hot, and then right before the main event, do something real, like, to kind of bring the crowd down a little bit.
That's interesting. That makes a lot of sense,
yeah,
actually.
Kind of maybe something a little lighter, goofier, short, you know what I mean? And then
let
get everyone.
Let you recoup a little bit.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
That's really smart.
Yeah, which is cool. I like that style a lot.
Yeah.
Is that
in the wrestling tradition, or is that a WWF
thing? Yeah, that's a WWF thing. Yeah, like in Japan, the way it's done is it builds and builds and builds.
Got it.
So I see the value in that as well.
Sure. I mean, that's what I would have thought. That would have rolled right into the Hogan match.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because that was like, had the energy there, and it's like, now you get the main event or whatever.
Yeah.
But that makes sense.
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay. Well, I think that's about it for now. Jordan, any plugs for you? Any social media plugs?
Oh, thank you.
Could you share what your blood type is with the crowd, please? With the folks at home?
That's okay. I'm all right. Thank you, though.
Okay. Well, you can follow me, Jordan, on Twitter at _burningspirits. And that's about it.
And you can submit your favorite Beanie Baby.
Yeah, please respond.
Collectibles.
With your favorite TY beanies. And before you correct me, Jordan, in this home, it's pronounced TY beanies.
I won't fight you.
Do not disrespect my home.
I will not.
All right. Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you.
Next time. Until next time, all right?
All right.
Bye.